Chapter 39. Of the field every autumn, after which it was trodden out afresh, the thaw had so loosened the soft earth, that lumps of stiff mud were lifted by his feet at every leap he took, and flung against him by his rapid motion, as it were doggedly impeding him, and increasing tenfold the customary effort of running. But he ran on uphill, and downhill, the same pace alike like the shadow of a cloud. His nearest direction to, like Owen's, was through the Dairy Barton, and as Owen entered it, he saw the figure of Edward rapidly descending the opposite hill, at a distance of 200 or 300 yards. Owen advanced amid the cows. The dairyman, who had hitherto been talking loudly on some absorbing subject to the maids and men milking around him, turned his face towards the head of the cow when Owen passed, and ceased speaking. Owen approached him, and said, "A singular thing has happened, I hear. The man is not insane, I suppose?" Naughty, he's sensible enough, said the dairyman, and paused. He was a man noisy with his associates, stolid and taciturn with strangers. "Is it true that he is Chinny, the railway porter?"
"That's the man, sir."
The maids and men sitting under the cows were all attentively listening to this discourse, milking irregularly, and softly directing the jets against the sides of the pail. Owen could contain himself no longer, much as his mind dreaded anything of the nature of ridicule. "The people all seem to look at me as if something seriously concerned me. Is it this stupid matter, or what is it?"
"Surely, sir, you know better than anybody else, if such a strange thing concerns you."
"What strange thing?"
"Don't you know?
His confessing to Parson Ronham."
"What did he confess? Tell me."
"If you really hadn't heard, 'tis this. He was as usual on duty at the station on the night of the fire last year, otherwise he wouldn't have known it."
"Known what?
For God's sake tell, man."
But at this instant the two opposite gates of the dairy yard, one on the east, the other on the west side, slammed almost simultaneously. The rector from one, Springrove from the other, came striding across the barton. Edward was nearest, and spoke first. He said in a low voice, "Your sister is not legally married. His first wife is still living. How it comes out I don't know."
"Oh, here you are at last, Mr. Gray, thank heaven."
Said the rector breathlessly. "I have been to the old house, and then to Miss Altcliffe's looking for you, something very extraordinary."
He beckoned to Owen, afterwards included Springrove in his glance, and the three stepped aside together. A porter at the station. He was a curious, nervous man. He had been in a strange state all day, but he wouldn't go home. "Your sister was kind to him, it seems, this afternoon. When she and her husband had gone, he went on with his work, shifting luggage vans. Well, he got in the way, as if he were quite lost to what was going on, and they sent him home at last. Then he wished to see me. I went directly. There was something on his mind, he said, and told it. About the time when the fire of last November 12th was got under, whilst he was by himself in the porter's room, almost asleep, somebody came to the station and tried to open the door. He went out, and found the person, to be the lady he had accompanied to Carriford earlier in the evening, Mrs. Manston. She asked, when would be another train to London? The first the next morning, he told her, was at 6:15 from Budmouth, but that it was express, and didn't stop at Carriford Road. It didn't stop till it got to Anglebury.
"How far is it to Anglebury?"
she said. He told her, and she thanked him, and went away up the line. In a short time she ran back, and took out her purse. "Aunt, on any account, say a word in the village or anywhere, that I have been here, or a single breath about me, I'm ashamed ever to have come." He promised. She took out 2 sovereigns.
Wear it on the testament in the waiting room, she said, and I'll pay you these. He got the book, took an oath upon it, received the money, and she left him. He was off duty at 5:30. He has kept silence all through the intervening time till now, but lately the knowledge he possessed weighed heavily upon his conscience and weak mind. Yet the nearer came the wedding day, the more he feared to tell. The actual marriage filled him with remorse. He says your sister's kindness afterwards was like a knife going through his heart. He thought he had ruined her. But whatever can be done? Why didn't he speak sooner? Cried Owen. He actually called at my house twice yesterday, the rector continued, resolved, it seems, to unburden his mind. I was out both times he left no message, and, they say, he looked relieved that his object was defeated. Then he says he resolved to come to you at the old house last night started, reached the door, and dreaded to knock, and then went home again. Here will be a tale for the newsmongers of the county, said Owen bitterly. The idea of his not opening his mouth sooner, the criminality of the thing. That's the inconsistency of a weak nature. But now that it is put to us in this way, how much more probable it seems that she should have escaped than have been burned. You will, of course, go straight to Mr. Manston and ask him what it all means? Edward interrupted. Of course I shall. Manston has no right to carry off my sister unless he's her husband, said Owen. I shall go and separate them. Certainly you will, said the rector. Where's the man? In his cottage. Tis no use going to him either. I must go off at once, and overtake them, lay the case before Manston, and ask him for additional and certain proofs of his first wife's death. An up train passes soon, I think. Where have they gone? Said Edward. To Paris as far as Southampton this afternoon, to proceed tomorrow morning. Where in Southampton? I really don't know some hotel. I only have their Paris address. But I shall find them by making a few inquiries. The rector had in the meantime been taking out his pocketbook, and now opened it at the first page, whereon it was his custom every month to gum a small railway timetable cut from the local newspaper. The afternoon express is just gone, he said, holding open the page, and the next train to Southampton passes at 6:10. Now at once let me see 5:40 to that time. Mr. Gray, my advice is that you come with me to the porter's cottage, where I will shortly write out the substance of what he has said, and get him to sign it. You will then have far better grounds for interfering between Mr. and Mrs. Manston than if you went to them with a mere hearsay story. The suggestion seemed a good one. Yes, there will be time before the train starts, said Owen. Edward had been musing restlessly. Let me go to Southampton in your place, on account of your lameness? He said suddenly to Gray. I am much obliged to you, but I think I can scarcely accept the offer, returned Owen coldly. Mr. Manston is an honorable man, and I had much better see him myself. There is no doubt, said Mr. Ronham, that the death of his wife was fully believed in by himself. None whatever, said Owen, and the news must be broken to him, and the question of other proofs asked, in a friendly way. It would not do for Mr. Springrove to appear in the case at all. He still spoke rather coldly. The recollection of the attachment between his sister and Edward was not a pleasant one to him. You will never find them, said Edward. You have never been to Southampton, and I know every house there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that makes little difference. Apostrophe, said the rector. He will have a cab. Certainly Mr. Gray is the proper man to go on the errand. Apostrophe, stay. I'll telegraph to ask them to meet me when I arrive at the terminus. Apostrophe, said Owen. That is, if their train has not already arrived. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Ronham pulled out his pocketbook again. The 2:30 train reached Southampton a quarter of an hour ago, apostrophe, he said. It was too late to catch them at the station. Nevertheless, the rector suggested that it would be worth while to direct a message to all the respectable hotels in Southampton, apostrophe, on the chance of its finding them, and thus saving a deal of personal labor to Owen in searching about the place. I'll go and telegraph, whilst you return to the man, apostrophe, said Edward, an offer which was accepted. Gray and the rector then turned off in the direction of the porter's cottage. Edward, to dispatch the message at once, hurriedly followed the road towards the station, still restlessly thinking. All Owen's proceedings were based on the assumption, natural under the circumstances, of Manston's good faith, and that he would readily acquiesce in any arrangement which should clear up the mystery. But, apostrophe, thought Edward, suppose, and heaven forgive me, I cannot help supposing it, that Manston is not that honorable man, what will a young and inexperienced fellow like Owen do? Will he not be hoodwinked by some specious story or another, framed to last till Manston gets tired of poor Cytherea? And then the disclosure of the truth will ruin and blacken both their futures irremediably. Apostrophe, apostrophe, however, he proceeded to execute his commission. This he put in the form of a simple request from Owen to Manston, that Manston would come to the Southampton platform and wait for Owen's arrival, as he valued his reputation. The message was directed as the rector had suggested, Edward guaranteeing to the clerk who sent it off that every expense connected with the search would be paid. No sooner had the telegram been dispatched than his heart sank within him at the want of foresight shown in sending it. Had Manston, all the time, a knowledge that his first wife lived, the telegram would be a forewarning which might enable him to defeat Owen still more signally. Whilst the machine was still giving off its multitudinous series of raps, Edward heard a powerful rush under the shed outside, followed by a long sonorous creak. It was a train of some sort, stealing softly into the station, and it was an up train. There was the ring of a bell. It was certainly a passenger train. Yet the booking office window was closed. Ho, ho, John, 17 minutes after time and only 3 stations up the line. The incline again? Apostrophe, the voice was the station master's, and the reply seemed to come from the guard. Yes, the other side of the cutting. The thaw has made it all in a perfect cloud of fog, and the rails are as slippery as glass. We had to bring them through the cutting at twice. Apostrophe, apostrophe, anybody else for the 4:45 express? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the voice continued. The few passengers, having crossed over to the other side long before this time, had taken their places at once. A conviction suddenly broke in upon Edward's mind, then a wish overwhelmed him. The conviction, as startling as it was sudden, was that Manston was a villain, who at some earlier time, had discovered that his wife lived, and had bribed her to keep out of sight, that he might possess Cytherea. The wish was to proceed at once by this very train that was starting, find Manston before he would expect from the words of the telegram, if he got it, that anybody from Carriford could be with him, charge him boldly with the crime, and trust to his consequent confusion if he were guilty, for a solution of the extraordinary riddle, and the release of Cytherea. The ticket office had been locked up at the expiration of the time at which the train was due. Rushing out as the guard blew his whistle, Edward opened the door of a carriage and leapt in. The train moved along, and he was soon out of sight. Springrove had long since passed that peculiar line which lies across the course of falling in love, if, indeed, it may not be called the initial itself of the complete passion, a longing to cherish, When the woman is shifted in a man's mind from the region of mere admiration to the region of warm fellowship, at this assumption of her nature, she changes to him in tone, hue, and expression. All about the loved one, that said she before, says we now. Eyes that were to be subdued become eyes to be feared for. A brain that was to be probed by cynicism becomes a brain that is to be tenderly assisted. Feet that were to be tested in the dance become feet that are not to be distressed. The once criticized accent, manner, and dress become the clients of a special pleader. 6. 5 to 8 o'clock p.m. Now that he was fairly on the track and had begun to cool down, Edward remembered that he had nothing to show, no legal authority whatever to question Manston or interfere between him and Cytherea as husband and wife. He now saw the wisdom of the rector in obtaining a signed confession from the porter. The document would not be a deathbed confession, perhaps not worth anything legally, but it would be held by Owen, and he alone, as Cytherea's natural guardian, could separate them on the mere ground of an unproved probability, or what might perhaps be called the hallucination of an idiot. Edward himself, however, was as firmly convinced as the rector had been of the truth of the man's story, and paced backward and forward the solitary compartment as the train wound through the dark heathery plains, the mazy woods, and moaning coppices, as resolved as ever to pounce on Manston, and charge him with the crime during the critical interval between the reception of the telegram and the hour at which Owen's train would arrive, trusting to circumstances for what he should say and do afterwards, but making up his mind to be a ready second to Owen in any emergency that might arise. At 33 minutes past 7 he stood on the platform of the station at Southampton a clear hour before the train containing Owen could possibly arrive. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.